Let me explain to you what Israel's goal is here. First of all, Israel's goal is to create Lebensraum. That's what I was describing to you when I said what Ben-Gurion's vision was regarding borders. So,
could you define the word?
Lebensraum means living room. You want a big country. You want lots of space for your people.
Yes. Strategic depth.
Strategic depth, yeah. And so that's one goal. The second goal that the Israelis have is they want to make sure that their neighbors are weak. And that means breaking them apart if you can, right? And keeping them broken. So the Israelis were thrilled that mainly the United States and the Turks broke apart Syria. One could argue that Syria was even broken before Assad fell. But the Israelis want Syria to be a fractured state. They want Lebanon to be a fractured state. What they want in Iran, you know, we talk about the nuclear program, the nuclear enrichment program, and the argument is sometimes made that the principal goal, the only goal, is to go in and eliminate their nuclear capability.
That's a lie.
Well, it's just part of the story. You could call it a lie. Yeah. What the Israelis want to do is they want to break Iran apart. They want to make it look like Syria, right? You want neighbors that are not powerful. You want them to be fractured. Jordan and Egypt, they have a different solution there. And what's happened is because those countries are economically backwards, the United States gives them huge amounts of economic aid.
I've noticed.
Yeah. And that's done for a purpose. And anytime the Egyptians...
And what's the purpose?
Because anytime the Egyptians or the Jordanians get uppity about Israel, the United States reminds them, you better behave yourself because we have huge economic leverage over you. You have to be friendly to Israel. So Jordan and Egypt never caused the Israelis any problem.
It sounds like our entire foreign policy, at least in the Western Hemisphere, is based on this one country.
Well, I would say in the Middle East.
Well, yeah.
In the Middle East, there is no question. People now call it West Asia, I believe. I call it the Middle East. In the Middle East, our policy is profoundly influenced by Israel. We give, as I said to you before, we have a special relationship with Israel that has no parallel in recorded history. It's very important to understand it. There is no single case in recorded history that comes even close to looking like the relationship that we have with Israel. Because again, as I said, states sometimes have similar interests, and this includes the United States and Israel,
for sure.
But they also have conflicting interests. And when a great power like the United States has conflicting interests with another country, it almost always, except in the case of Israel, acts in terms of its own interests. America first. But when it comes to Israel, it's Israel first. And if you go to the Middle East and look at our policy there, there's just abundant evidence to support that.
So then the question, I mean, there's so many questions, but the question is why? Like, what is that? And I think it's really causing serious problems in the current ruling coalition because the contradiction is too obvious. It's not America first. And people can see that because it's so evident. But what are the causes of it? Like, why would, for the first time, as you said, in recorded history, a nation spend, you know, whatever it is, $1 trillion a year of, in effect, to serve the interests of another country? Like, why?
Well, I believe there's one simple answer, the Israel lobby. I think the lobby is an incredibly powerful interest group. And I'm choosing my words carefully. It has awesome power. And it basically is in a position where it can profoundly influence U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. And indeed, it affects foreign policy outside of the Middle East. But when it comes to the Middle East, and again, the Palestinian issue in particular, it has awesome power. And there's no president who is willing to buck the lobby.
What sort of power is it? Because it's not rhetorical. It's not, you know, the most powerful movements in history are fueled by an idea. It's usually the most powerful are fueled by an idea that it's like true, right? But I never hear anybody make a detailed case for why the United States benefits from the current arrangement. Never. No one, ever. Nikki Haley came as close as anyone by saying the United States gets a lot more out of the relationship than Israel does, but then never explained how exactly that works. So it's not a matter of like convincing people, clearly. So what is it a matter of? Where does that power come from?
Well, let me put this in a broader context. I think that in the past, when I was younger, the lobby operated on two levels. One was the policy level, and two was the popular discourse.
Yes.
And I think in terms of the popular discourse, for a long, long time, right? And this would be well into the 2000s. The Israel lobby basically influenced the discourse in ways that made the Israelis look like the good guys. And it made it look like every time the United States supported Israel, it was because it was in our national interest, right? So the discourse was not at odds with what was happening at the policy level.
Right.
Now, the situation you described, which I think is a perfect description of the situation that we face today, is that the lobby has lost control of the discourse. And people now understand that the United States is doing things for Israel that are not in the American national interest.
Your identity is constantly under attack. In just the last year, Americans lost over $16 billion to scammers online. Anyone can fall victim to this. Your social security number, your bank account, your credit profile can be exposed and you won't even know it. And the second they are exposed, thieves can take out loans in your name, open credit cards, wreck your life financially. Identity Guard can save you. Identity Guard monitors everything from your credit card to your bank accounts to your social security number, looking for early signs of fraud before damage is done. If something weird happens, you get an instant alert. If someone does steal your identity, Identity Guard's expert team works directly with banks, credit card companies, and lenders to shut it down quickly. End the scam. Having your identity stolen is a nightmare. Someone in this country becomes a victim of identity theft every 6 seconds. Identity Guard protects you. 30-day free trial and exclusive discount at identityguard.com/Tucker. Protect yourself before it's too late. Identityguard.com/Tucker.
Furthermore, they see the lobby out in the open engaging in smash mouth politics. People are now fully aware that there is a lobby out there, that it's trying to control the discourse. And in fact, it basically does control. Maybe that's a bit too strong a word, but it's close. It basically does control the policymakers. So now you have this real disconnect.
Well, it controls the policymakers. I mean, that's demonstrable, you know, yeah, I think. It's measurable.
Yeah.
So,
yes. But so you have what you were describing is the disconnect between the discourse and the policy world that now exists. But what I'm saying to you is you want to remember that the lobby was immensely successful for a long period of time because the discourse and the policy process looked like they were in sync.
So successful that just basic historical facts about the creation of this nation state in 1948 are like unknown to people, and it's shocking to hear them. And you think, well, that can't be right. That's like so far from what I heard as a child that that's obvious. What? All the Christians were kicked out? All these Christians were kicked out of their historic homelands there, and of course, many more Muslims. And did that really happen? I mean, people just have no idea what the facts are. It's kind of interesting.
Yes, well, the lobby went to great lengths to make sure that you didn't know the facts.
And anyone who said the facts out loud was like a lunatic or a jihadist or a hater of some kind.
An anti-Semite.
Yeah.
Self-hating Jews. You know, it's very interesting. I often think about my own evolution in this regard. When I grew up as a kid, I was heavily influenced by Leon Uris's book, Exodus, and then the subsequent movie with, I think, Paul Newman and Eva Marie Saint. And that, of course, that Exodus story portrayed the Israelis in the most favorable light and the Arabs or Palestinians in the most negative light. So for much of my life, up until the late 80s, early 90s, I thought the Israelis were without a doubt, the good guys up against the bad guys. And it was really David versus Goliath as well. And the Israelis were David up against an Arab Goliath. That was the picture I had in my head. But then in the late 80s, early 90s, a group of historians in Israel called the New Historians came on the scene.
Benny Morris.
Benny Morris, Avi Schleim.
Yeah.
Ilan Pape.
Some of them were amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
I agree.
And what they did was they had access to the archives.
Yes.
And they told the real story.
And that was a moment where I think the country felt, Israel felt confident enough to allow that conversation internally and that honesty.
I think that's exactly right. The lobby had been so successful.
Yes.
Israel had been so successful.
Yes. I went there. I was amazed. What a beautiful place. Great people. It was great.
Yeah. They thought they controlled, they had things under control.
They did.
That's right. And that they could allow these historians to tell the truth. Now, I believe they could have gotten away with it if they had stopped expanding or if they had agreed to a two-state solution. The problem is that after the early 1990s, when this literature came out, the Israelis continued to act in barbaric ways towards the Palestinians. And
well, they had a prime minister who tried to reverse the trend, and then I guess he was shot to death.
He was moving in that direction. I think there were a number of Israeli leaders who understood that the course that Israel was on was unsustainable.
You often heard them say that.
Yeah.
There was a robust debate within the country about this.
Well, whether they would have agreed to a Palestinian state ultimately is an open question. But the fact is, Rabin was killed. Ehud Barak, who made moves towards a two-state solution, ultimately couldn't pull it off. And we are where we are today. And the problem is that something else occurred in the late 90s, early 2000s, which fundamentally affected Israel's position, and that's the internet. Because once you get the internet and once you get social media, and the mainstream media is not the sole source of information on these issues, the story about the real creation of Israel and what Israel is doing today is available to the vast majority.
And it's shocking to people. So you have to shut down the internet. You can't allow that.
Yeah. You can try to shut down the internet, but, you know, there are limits to what you can do.
Thanks for watching. You can go to tuckercarlson.com for our entire library of everything we've done, and we hope you will.